This is Bart Peterson, and you are listening to the FCPA Compliance Report on the Compliance Podcast Network.
This is Greg Gilchrist, and you are listening to the FCPA Compliance Report on the Compliance Podcast Network.
This is Dan DeMarco, and you are listening to the FCPA Compliance Report on the Compliance Podcast Network.
In this episode, I visit with Asher Miller. Asher is a lawyer with a compliance specialty practicing in Tel Aviv, Israel. We take a look at the current compliance scene in Israel. We ask whether the message of anti-bribery and anti-corruption compliance programs resonate with businesses in Israel. We consider the lessons learned from the Goldman Sachs FCPA settlement and the Airbus International anti-corruption settlement in Israel. Asher had one of the greatest compliance lines ever, which is, quote, like in poker, if you can't spot the fool around the table, it's probably you, end quote. We discuss that line, and we take a look at the TAVA FCPA settlement and how it was received by Israeli companies. It's a fascinating exploration of the current compliance scene in Israel. I know you will find it interesting and useful. Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox back again for another episode. You're in for a real treat today because we have an Israeli lawyer. You are our second Israeli on this podcast, Asher. I have Asher Miller with me. So, Asher, first of all, welcome and thank you so much for taking the time to visit with me today.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here from Tel Aviv, Israel. It's 5:20 in the afternoon and it's about to be the weekend in Israel.
So, Asher, for those who follow the FCPA blog may recognize that name. He has contributed to the commentary here, and he wrote a piece last year, and we connected. And so I asked him to come onto the podcast and really tell us about the compliance scene in Israel as he sees it. But Asher, could you start off by telling us a little bit about your professional background?
Yeah, sure, Tom. Well, I'm a lawyer for 25 years now. I started with the defense industries more than 20 years ago with the Israeli aerospace industries. Then I did the tour of 5-6 years in major Israeli law firms in Tel Aviv. Did a lot of finance, M&A, startup, and high-tech work. That's where I gained most of my commercial and corporate experience. But then went back to the defense industries. And in my last position, my last corporate position, I was the compliance officer for Israeli military industries. It used to be a big exporter of big defense exporter in Israel. I say it used to be because it was acquired by Elbit, a bigger company, bigger defense company in Israel. And about 3 years ago, I started my own law firm, specializing on one hand in regulatory and compliance issues, and on the other hand in defense contracting, which is my specialty. And with my team, we deal with a couple dozen Israeli exporters and companies from around the world.
So I was wondering if you, well, it looks like to me from your professional background and a little bit of research I did, you've been on the forefront of the dangers of bribery and corruption for Israeli businesses for some time. And I guess the first question is, does that message now resonate with your clients or those of your potential clients and the business community in Israel?
Well, it's a very interesting question, Tom. And things and circumstances are changing each day. I mean, with the last, the Abraham Accords with the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain, and hopefully with Saudi Arabia and other countries, Israel is becoming more and more of a hub, or I would say a bridge between cultures and various parts of the world. So on one hand, we are, you know, the startup nation, have more companies listed in U.S. Stock exchanges than any other country in the world, including China and Europe. But on the other hand, in certain regulatory matters, including enforcement in bribery or money laundering or related issues, we lag back, I would say, after the U.S. between 5 to 10 years. So the great, the big trend of compliance that I would say started under the Obama administration 10 or 12 years ago, and we're still experiencing it right now, got to Israel by a delay of 6 to 7 years. And compliance in Israel started in about 2010, when I started my position as compliance officer in IMI. And on one hand, things are, I mean, most of the companies in Israel know of compliance and have compliance regimes in place. But on the other hand, I would say some companies don't know it yet or look at it as a non-existent danger or a risk not worth defending against right now. So it's a very, I would say, an average point between strong enforcement on one hand, which is coming and many companies are aware of, and on the other hand, of companies or clients not knowing yet what is the meaning of compliance for them.
How would you assess the, not the enforcement, but actually having compliance programs in place? Does that message resonate, or does it really, is it driven by the amount of enforcements and companies see this as a risk that a compliance program can help them overcome?
I think that for Israeli companies right now, and this is the message I give to my clients or potential companies or people that come to my lectures and webinars. And you know that if you have a great compliance program in the closet, in the cupboard, it won't help you. The question is the implementation. The question is, do you do the fieldwork? The question is, do you do the day-to-day monitoring of your third parties, of your transactions? That's hard work. That's sometimes dirty work or unpleasant work, but you have to do it to in order to have good compliance in your company. So some Israeli companies, even big ones, publicly traded or conglomerates, have, I think, great compliance programs. But the question is, what's the implementation? And that, I don't, for many of them, I don't know. For some of them, I know they have good implementation, or at least for my clients, I know they have great implementation, or I know that I saw it and it's good. And for some of them, I know from my own knowledge that I saw that they don't have any good implementation, and they think the compliance program will save them in judgment day, and it simply won't. And this, if you ask me, some of the Israeli companies, even the larger ones, are not aware of yet.
So I was very intrigued by your remarks a little bit earlier about things changing almost by the day now. We've experienced that in the United States over the last 4 years from the Trump administration, certainly in the area of trade controls, sometimes twice a day. But you actually said things are opening up and that you see Israel now as a bridge to many other countries and other cultures. And I have to say, I find that incredibly refreshing that it's not as negative as it's been here in the States. But with those opportunities would seem to bring other challenges that you've now had to think about. So with things changing so quickly, How do you help clients understand that in the dynamic environment you find yourself in now?
Well, I think I'll start with the bottom line. As you know, as we are legal professionals, you help clients by the day or by the crisis or by the time they call you at 5 a.m. in the morning and need your advice. So you respond to the crisis or you respond to whatever happens. But more generally speaking, and answering your question, Tom, I think really opportunities and challenges are opening up. First of all, in the U.S., I mean, hopefully there will be the change of administration on Wednesday, and a new president. You don't know what will be his position. Let's say China-wise, Europe-wise, Russia-wise, and will all the sanctions stay in place? Will all the trade barriers stay in place? Will the CFIUS strengthen or be more eased? We don't know that yet. And in Israel right now, and that's I'm experiencing with many companies I'm talking with, The United States is not more seen as the only opportunity for doing major business like it was in the past. So if you're a startup, you're planning, your horizon will be the U.S. market, and that's it, and that's your exit strategy. And exit strategies these days include China on one hand for some Israeli companies, and Chinese investments in Israel are on the growth. You know, they have now two of the major ports in Israel. I would say the two major seaports in Israel are now practically owned by Chinese companies. Yeah, I mean, people would say that's not a good idea, but I'm not the government, and I didn't do the tender. Yeah. But that's a fact. And in addition to that, companies and big money from the Emirates, from the Arab Emirates, is also coming in. And Israel right now does not have a very detailed response to that, saying, okay, we have our own CFIUS, don't invest in that, don't do that, or there's a regulation. So trying to answer your question, things are changing by the day. Regulation, of course, lags behind, as usual. The legal professionals are always, I mean, the lawmakers are lagging behind. But business-wise, right now, it's buzzing. Everything is buzzing because all those new areas are opening. The United States will obviously have some changes in the next coming month in trade barriers and in sanctions and in other things that were implemented in the past, and you don't know if they'll stay like that. So I think, coming back to the answer, we are responding, and I'm responding in my firm to clients' needs on a day-to-day basis. I can't say I see the opening, I see the horizons obviously opening. I don't know what the changes are going to be in detail.
I actually came across you, as I mentioned, because of your writings in the FCPA blog. And you wrote about the Goldman Sachs settlement and the Airbus settlement. And so I wanted to maybe visit with you about those and start off with, those were two of the largest settlements in the history of the world ever. And I think, at least in the United States, many compliance practitioners have trouble understanding or synthesizing the lessons because the cases were so huge. So my first question is, how do you help a compliance professional understand these lessons are actually applicable to you and your company, even though they're massive settlements from companies that engaged in bribery and corruption literally across the globe?
That's a very good question, Tom, because sometimes I have the case coming to rather smaller companies, and they say, look, You're talking about compliance that applies to Goldman Sachs, the Israeli aerospace industries, major companies, publicly traded companies. How does it apply to us? But as we all know, as compliance professionals, these are the principles. And if you read thoroughly the DOJ papers, as I see you do a lot, and when reading your pieces, you read them letter by letter. And I try to follow suit in what I read and write. You can see the guidelines. You can see the DOJ and you can see the SEC professionals saying, actually, from the papers, you can understand that between the lines, they say, people, these are the principles. They apply the same for a 10-people company and a 10,000-people company. So it goes the same. So the lessons are applicable to everyone.
So I have to credit you with one of the greatest lines ever in compliance commentary, and I'm just going to read it because it's so great. Like in poker, if you can't spot the fool around the table, it's probably you. You wrote that in connection with your piece on Goldman Sachs. So I wanted to really ask you, what did you mean by that? Why did you use that line? Are you a poker player? So that you have some knowledge of that. And once again, that is just one of the greatest compliance lines ever.
First of all, Tom, it's a great compliment coming from you, the compliance guru, saying that it's a great compliance piece. For me, you saying that it's really a big compliment. And I think, no, I'm not a poker player at all. I don't play cards at all. I play chess. And that's not similar, I think. But that's something that really came from my heart And from my experience in being an in-house counsel for many years and a compliance officer for many years, and you know, these positions, you sometimes stand in very tight situation, being pressured from various echelons of the companies to just leave the deal alone, onboard the third party, don't hassle us, don't bother us, just do your work, don't come to our meetings, don't come abroad with us to do the negotiations, and let's leave your opinion where it is. And that's a difference, in my opinion, between sometimes sleeping very soundly at night in a company, or just for its officers to face jail time or indictments. Because as my first mentor in legal counsel position said, in a company, if you're a general counsel or legal counsel or compliance officer, you got to be the oil in the engine and not the barricade in front of the truck. If you're the barricade, you'll stay in your room. You'll issue opinions. You'll send, like in the Goldman Sachs, you know, everything is quoted there. And also in the Deutsche Bank papers that came out now. I mean, you quoted it in one of your pieces that they actually were sending emails saying, do not onboard. We feel very uncomfortable with onboarding this third party. Or we don't really want these transactions. Or we recommend. But they didn't follow up. They didn't go to the meeting. They didn't go to the hardcore places or to the board meeting or to the management meeting and say, we are not going to let this happen. Or we are letting this happen on condition of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And that's true compliance work. And that's what I meant by that, to say, just being around the table and just saying, yeah, we think that this third party poses a problem to our company. And that's not doing a job of a compliance officer. Compliance officer has to be proactive, has to be very involved in the day-to-day conversations and talks and the culture of the company. He has to be a team player. He has to be part of the team. If he's not part of the team, he's obsolete. And that's so obvious from whatever we see, all we see in Goldman Sachs, in Airbus, yet again in Deutsche Bank, and in many other cases.
So now that I know you're a chess player, let me move to that game, because I wanted to ask you about your corporate experience and then your experience in private practice. I'm a recovering trial lawyer before I went in-house in a corporation. And when I went in-house in a corporation, I discovered that the intellectual challenge was much greater than I had anticipated, particularly in the commercial world, for the following reason. You have multiple levels of law you would have to apply. So, for instance, in the United States, I'm in Houston, Texas, we'd have Texas law. We would have U.S. law. There would probably be U.S. regulation. If the contract was with an Israeli company, there would probably be an Israeli law component. And then finally, there was corporate law or policies and procedures. And that if you moved one piece, sometimes six moves down, you had to think about that. And was that sort of your experience in the corporate world as well, that you would have to apply several different areas or even jurisdictions of law for a contract?
Not exactly, no. Although I sympathize with your hardship trying to cope with all the different systems of law on your table. No, in Israel, although we go, of course, we are obligated, we are under Israeli law in everything. When I worked as a corporate lawyer, we most of the time worked under U.S. law, under U.S. and under New York law, New York or Delaware in many cases. And in some cases, California law, but that's more rare. And most of the time, we applied U.S. and New York law. And in every major Israeli company, you have a couple of New York admitted lawyers, and you can consult with them. How would that apply under U.S. corporate law or under New York corporate law? And, of course, under Israeli law, corporate law, you know that. But I would like to say, compliance-wise, I see sometimes Israeli companies making the mistake by trying to go American, like American is big, American is good, high-tech is American, let's go there. And as I said, things are changing now. Some companies are eyeing the Chinese market or the Emirates market or the European market or other markets. But some of them apply unnecessarily the FCPA when they don't have to. Let's say they don't have any footprint in the United States. They don't have a subsidiary. They don't do business over there. Okay, they pay in dollars. Okay. But besides of that, they don't have any footprint in the U.S. And I saw companies that put in their compliance program, yes, we are obligated under various laws, including the OECD convention, the Israeli law, and the FCPA. And I tell them, people, that's a basic jurisdiction issue. Don't bring the FCPA in unless you have to. If you'll have to, I mean, if you're publicly traded in the NASDAQ, there's no avoiding it. But it's like saying we are obligated by the UK Bribery Act because it's a nice law or it's good against bribery, but you will bring in the SFO to your front door without being obliged to.
So let me turn to the Teva settlement, I think 3 years ago now. That was a very large FCPA settlement. And how was that settlement received by Israeli companies or even by lawyers such as yourself that practice in this area?
Until today, I think, it's the biggest corruption settlement for an Israeli company if you don't take into consideration the Siemens settlement, because the Siemens settlement involved companies in 12 countries. But for an Israeli company per se like Teva, it was a big settlement. Not that big. I mean, Teva will not be devastated by $500 million payment, yeah? But it was a big hit, and people and companies were a bit shocked by it. But as I said in the beginning, it didn't make didn't bring a tsunami. It didn't bring a trend of all companies being saying, okay, we got to now do thorough compliance efforts in our companies. We got to change everything. We got to be very clean because we are all under scrutiny of the American authorities. No, people, like, you know, in Israel, you say it's a saying that the news, yesterday news is no news today because things are changing so rapidly. So after a couple of weeks, people kind of forgot about it. And also, Teva is a very interesting example because Teva is entangled right now, I think, in 5 or 6 indictments or arrangement in anti-bribery, in other issues, in commercial issues, in medical issues. It's a company that has, in my opinion, a serious compliance problem right now. On one hand, and that I know in person, has great compliance people working in the company. But it seems that the company for the last 5 or 10 years is going from trouble to trouble, in at least in the United States, but in other places as well, in compliance program of various fields and issues. So something doesn't work over there. I mean, if the compliance is okay, so what does a higher management do? Or if the management is not okay, so how does compliance make for it? So it's very interesting. But for the settlement itself, I think people already forgot about it, about the Teva. We now have a new piece in the news. It's the Steinmetz trial in Switzerland starting. And Steinmetz is not poor. Is no poor guy. He's a billionaire and a very successful businessman. And you know, he was convicted in Romania a couple of weeks ago, but he wasn't in Romania. So the Romanian government has no authority on him, has no possibility to enforce it on him. But in Switzerland, it's a serious indictment, and it's regarding his business in Guinea, in Africa. And it remains to be seen. It's only the opening of the trial. So that's the big compliance piece of news in Israel right now.
So I followed that matter extensively over the years, and I was very intrigued with his defense, which was, although it's my name on the company, I really have nothing to do with it. I'm just the ambassador. So it was an interesting way for him to start out, given the a really interesting set of facts. And I'm following that very closely, so I'll probably start writing about that as well. And I think that could be a tsunami if he's actually convicted. We rarely get convictions of anyone, one, at that level, and two, certainly at that level of wealth. You wrote an article early on in the coronavirus health crisis entitled Corruption Compliance in COVID Times, What's the Exit Strategy? And that was, I think, about 10 months ago. And I was wondering, as we record this in early 2021, has your assessment changed or have simply risks changed that need a reassessment?
Well, first of all, everyone is so surprised and so overwhelmed by the corona crisis because, you know, in the beginning, we thought, like everyone, it's going to take a couple of months. The world is going to sneeze it off. And that's it. We'll come back. Nobody imagined that will be almost a year after its commencement, and we're still here. I don't know what the situation in Houston that I visited a couple of times, a great city, and you're most invited to Tel Aviv, but not today because we are under lockdown. So I did not imagine that 10 months later I'll still be in lockdown. Talking to you from my home office. But I think, and I read this piece after we talked, I read this piece again, and I think my message over there has only strengthened because I see in some companies and in some business transactions that people and companies tend to really bend their compliance mechanism in companies. They do onboarding faster than usual because, you know, it's an emergency and we got to save the company. So leave the due diligence a bit or leave the compliance requirements a bit and let's rush forward because we got to bring some profit to the company. Or they don't do anything by the letter or they don't follow exactly the compliance procedures. And what I urge companies over there, and I said, listen, although we are in a kind of stoppage, in international stoppage because of the corona, we see that most of the enforcement authorities in the world, mainly the DOJ, the FBI, the SEC, and others, including the Israeli authorities, are not in a stoppage. They're indicting, they're arresting, they're confiscating assets. They do the same for them. It's the same. So you will not be excused. A company will not be excused when saying, listen, it was a corona time, so we didn't check. So maybe he bribed someone. Yeah, but give us a break. It was corona time. The authorities won't give you a break. So you better step up your compliance because these are harsh times and many people are not in their position. And people tend to take easily the compliance obligations of a company because it's not the core obligation. The core obligation is to save the company and to bring revenues and to bring profits. But the thing is that if they will forget their regulatory obligations, they're going to face major problems after the crisis is over and maybe in the crisis itself. I mean, we see the United, we saw the last settlements in the U.S., people in the authorities are working almost as usual, right?
No, not almost as usual. Absolutely as usual.
Yeah, exactly. So, exactly.
Asher, unfortunately, we are near the end of our time, but I was wondering if our listeners wanted any more information on yourself, your law practice, or the services you and your law firm provide, where could they go?
First of all, you know, they can go to our company website. It's www.compliance.co.il. Very easy. That's for compliance in Israel. I also have many articles spread all over. They can Google my name, Asher Miller, on the web, and they'll get to it. But I think the best place to go is on our site. And from time to time, we send materials to our clients or to companies we talk to. And I'll be delighted to answer any question or inquiry.
Could they reach out to you on LinkedIn as well?
Sure. You could get to my profile. It's Asher Miller in Israel doing compliance. There's only one guy like me.
Asher, I wanted to thank you. This has been a fascinating visit, and I hope that I might be able to call upon you again to continue this conversation. I know I'm going to want to talk to you about the Steinmetz trial, but and the compliance scene in Israel. So I look forward to continuing the conversation.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Tom. It's been a pleasure and a privilege to be a guest in your very esteemed show. And I really hope that we could do another meeting very, very soon again.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox again. I'd like to thank you for listening to this episode of the FCPA Compliance Report. If you have any questions on this episode, you can email me at tfox@tfoxlaw.com. I would greatly appreciate it if you would rate our podcast in iTunes, as it would help us increase our rankings and expanding our listener base for the oldest podcast in compliance. If you have any questions you'd like explored on this podcast, please send them to me as well, or you can leave them on the Compliance Podcast Network. The FCPA Compliance Report is a production of the Compliance Podcast Network. I hope you'll join us again next week, where we take up another issue in FCPA and compliance. Thanks again for listening.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.